Who are the real people we consider our sages? Who were they in life? What is the legacy they left us? Join Rabbi Danny Sackstein for the next hour as he explores the lives of our Torah giants, the spiritual geniuses who shaped the way we approach Judaism today. That's Focus on Our Sages right now on 101.9 Chai FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Soul to Soul. Great to be with you on a Wednesday afternoon as always. Today is the 3rd of April 2024. The Hebrew date is the 24th of Adar Sheni 5784. So we usually go through the dates of the week that we find ourselves in and the significance of those dates. So I want to start out with Sunday was the 21st of Adar. And Sunday was the Yahrzeit of Rabbi Yitzhak Elchanan Spector. Rabbi Yitzhak Elchanan Spector, otherwise known as the Kovno Rov, he was born in 1817 in Belarus and he died in 1896 in Kovno. He served as the chief rabbi of Kovno, which was the most prominent rabbinical position during the 19th century for Lithuanian Jewry. So I thought we'd talk a little bit about him because there's a lot to learn from this great human being, and it's always inspiring to learn from the lives of holy individuals within the Jewish people, within Klal Yisrael. Rabbi Yitzhak Elchanan was a student of Rabbi Binyamin Diskin, who was the rabbi of Vilkovitsk in Lithuania, and he actually was a colleague, a friend, a chavrusa, of Rabbi Diskin's son, Yehoshua Leib Diskin, who later would become the Rabbi of Brisk and Rabbi in Yerushalayim, and they were always remained very close throughout their lives. He accepted that he married at a young age and went to live together with his wife's family in Vilkovitsk. So that's how he came to study under Rabbi Diskin. And in the year 1851, he was a young man still, in his early 30s, he was appointed as the rabbi of Novodok, which was one of the cities, one of the shtetls, one of the well-known prominent shtetls with a significant Jewish community in Novodok. He stayed over there in Novodok for 13 years. And in the year 1864, he was appointed as the chief rabbi of Kovno. A post that, as we mentioned, the most prominent post for a rabbi in Lithuania in the 19th century. And he remained there in his position until he passed away in 1896. He was a very prominent leader of Lithuanian Jewry. And together with Rav Yisrael Salanta, he was active in opposing the anti-Semitic decrees of the Russian government. Rabbi Spector visited St. Petersburg twice to take part in conferences held there on the situation of the Jewish community throughout Russia, and in particular in dealing with the brutal pogroms that started in 1881 and continued through those very dark years for East European Jewry. We know that there was a tremendous amount of immigration from that time because the anti-Semitism and the pogroms against the Jews intensified. They were always present in East European Jewry life, but they got particularly severe. There was the assassination of Tsar Nicholas in 1881, and the Jews were, of course, blamed. The Jews had nothing to do with it, but the Jews were a convenient scapegoat for anything that went wrong in Russia. And so the pogroms intensified both in terms of their brutality and in terms of their frequency. And as a result of that, we see that there was a massive movement of East European Jews from that time onwards to Western Europe and particularly to the United States. The numbers are quite staggering. From 1881 to 1910, more than 2 million Jews left Eastern Europe and arrived at the United States. So an incredible number, considering how difficult it was to travel in those days. They didn't get on a flight and book online, and, you know, 12 hours later arrived at their destination. Most of those people sold the majority of their possessions in order to be able to afford the ticket to go to the Golden Nomad dinner to the United States, and arrived at the door at the shores of America completely impoverished. And it's just incredible to consider. It took them weeks and weeks to get there. 2 million people did so. That's how bad it was. That's how miserable life was for Jews in Eastern Europe. And they all hoped and dreamed of a better future, of a better future for themselves, of a better future for their family, and left in droves. And actually, it was very difficult for people who were observant. Already by the end of the 19th century, large parts of the Jewish community were no longer observant. The Haskalah had ravaged East European Jewry and West European Jewry. But for somebody to be observant to leave was very difficult because the infrastructure of a observant Jew had not yet been built in the United States. So it was very difficult to go there where there were very few communities. It was difficult to get hold of kosher food. You had to work on Shabbos. So for observant Jews to go was difficult. Most of the established Jews, most of the Jews that had businesses or were prominent in the community didn't go because they, you know, it was difficult to leave. But those that didn't have anything to lose and had a very difficult life in Eastern Europe and were hoping for a better future left. And that's why the numbers were so high. So the leaders of the community tried to do all they could to mitigate these brutal pogroms and to stabilize the community. And that's why Rav Yitzhak Yochanan Spector, together with Rav Yisrael Salanta, went to had a number of meetings with the Russian government in order to try and stabilize the situation, but most of the time they were not successful. Rav Yitzhak Elchanan also put in great effort to save the Volozhin Yeshiva, which was closed by the Russian government, but in this too he failed. And unfortunately, the Volozhin Yeshiva was closed, which was a great blow for East European Jewry. Volozhin was the mother of all yeshivas, although there were a number of very prominent successful yeshivas which were born out of Volozhin. They all shut down Volozhin shut down, but those other yeshivas kept going, and that was the future of the Jewish community in Eastern Europe. After Volozhin closed, so he was active, Rav Yisrael Elchanan, in building the Kovno Perushim, which was a great center of learning, as well as the Kovno Kollel. He was very active in the Chovei Tzion movement. Chovei Tzion was the religious Zionists. In other words, you had secular Zionism, which were mainly socialists who wanted to, and they took over the Zionist movement, but you had a religious stream within the Zionist movement, which was called Chovei Tzion, which even the most recognized and what we call today Haredi, most fervent rabbis of Eastern Europe supported the Chovei Tzion and wanted to build up Eretz Yisrael to be a place for religious Jews to go. He was, interestingly enough, the anonymous friend of Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, who encouraged Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch to write a very famous essay, article, in defense of the Talmud and Talmudic literature against the anti-Semitic slanders of the Russian government. He was very well known, renowned for his love for his students, the Kovno of Rav Yitzhak Yochanan Spector, and he was involved in a case that happened. There was a student in Kovno who had been conscripted to the Russian army. If you were conscripted to the Russian army, it was basically the end of your life as a Jew, and you would be, it'd be very difficult to maintain your observance as a religious Jew, and it was, and in most cases, was a death sentence as well. And so he put in great effort to ensure that this student of his would get an exemption from the conscription. And he was in the middle of a Din Torah in Kovno. Now, a Din Torah obviously is a case where it's a monetary matter where two different Balei Din bring their case to the Beis Din and to adjudicate what the din is, what the halacha is with regards to the payment of the claims from one to the other. So always a very highly emotionally charged situation, a very serious circumstance. And while he's in the middle of this din Torah, a boy came in to tell him, Rebbe, Zalman received his exemption. which the governor was involved in. And he was so grateful that the boy came. He said, in the middle of this interior, he said, everybody just hold on a second. Thank you so much for telling me the news. I'm so grateful that you thought of me to tell me. That's wonderful news. And then 10 minutes later, another boy comes in and tells him. And he says the same to that boy. Thank you for thinking of me. Thank you for sharing with me the great news. A third boy comes. Within that hour of the interior, six different boys came to tell him that his student had received an exemption. And he treated each one with the same dignity and the same respect and said, thank you for thinking of me and thank you for sharing me the news. So that's just a vignette of how much he cared for and how close he was to his students and how beloved he was to the people that were around. If you stay with us, we'll be back in a moment.
This is Focus on Our Sages with Rabbi Danny Sackstein on 101.9 Chai FM.
We're talking about the renowned Rabbi Yitzhak Elchanan Spector, who was the Kovno Rav, the great rabbi of Kovno in Lithuania. Kovno is the second biggest city in Lithuania. The biggest city is Vilna, of course. Second biggest is Kovno, and there was a massive Jewish community until the Shoah, until the Holocaust, where the Jews of Kovno were wiped out. There was the Kovno ghetto, which the Nazis liquidated towards the end of the war, in which thousands and thousands of great Jews were murdered. So the Kovno Rav, who died in 1896, it was his 128th Yotzat on Sunday, on the 21st of Adar. And we are talking about this great man of Yitzhak Elchanan Spector. He wrote a collection of his responsa called Ber Yitzhak. And after his death in 1896, a number of institutions named their institutions after him. For example, we have the Rabbi Isaac Elchanan Theological Seminary, which is the abbreviation is RITS, which is part of the Yeshiva University, the very famous Yeshiva University in New York. So their religious side, their base midrash, is called RITS, Rabbi Isaac Elchanan Theological Seminary. So it's named after the Kovno Rav. And also, I didn't know this, I just found this out today, that the Knesset base Yitzhak in Kamenetz of the famous Rabbi Baruch Ber Leibovitz was also named after him. Knesset Beis Yitzhak is after Rabbi Yitzhak Elchanan Spector. He had a daughter and he had three sons. One of his sons' name was Hirsch Rabinovich, and he was also known as the Magid of Vilna, a person who taught a tremendous amount of Torah in Vilna, and he succeeded his father as the rabbi of Kovno when he passed away in 1896. So let's move on before we do to mention that Diskim Wellness Clinic for Adults offers convenient professional care to help you manage health risks, whether you're having your regular wellness checks such as blood pressure or cholesterol. Diskim Wellness Clinics offer you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care, find your nearest Diskim Wellness Clinic inside Diskim Pharmacies. Better health starts here. So let's move on to yesterday. Yesterday's date was the 23rd of Adar, and the 23rd of Adar marks the beginning of the seven-day inauguration period of the tabernacle, the portable sanctuary that accompanied the Jewish people in the desert following the exodus from Egypt. Moshe Rabbeinu served as the high priest during these 7 days, and on the eighth day, his brother Aaron took over, as recorded in this week's Parsha in Vayikra, Perek Chesh, chapter 8 and chapter 9. This week's Parsha is called Shmini, because on the Yom HaShmini, on the eighth day, that's when Aaron and his sons were inaugurated and took over as the Kohanim. The tabernacle, the Mishkan, was the center of Jewish spiritual life and the precursor to the building of the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim by Shlomo HaMelech, by King Solomon, about 350 years later. And then that lasted 410 years. And then 70 years later, the Second Temple was built, and that lasted 420 years, which was destroyed in 70 of the Common Era. So it's amazing that on yesterday is the 23rd of Adar, was the beginning of that inauguration period. The building of all the parts had been set up and had been put together, And Moshe Rabbeinu now just had to construct the Mishkan after everything had been done. And he did so starting from yesterday, took him a week, and it was completed on Rosh Chodesh Adar, after which Aaron and his sons took over as the Kohanim. So one can imagine, and that is, as mentioned, this week's parasha. So let's talk about that a little bit. One could imagine the incredible moment that was when the Mishkan, the sanctuary, was finally constructed by Moshe, and Aaron and his sons were now inaugurated as the priests, as the Kohanim. Them and their descendants would have this elevated role, this great privilege of doing the Avodah, of carrying out the service in the Mishkan, in the sanctuary, and later in the Beis HaMikdash. And then we see a terrible thing happened. We see that two of Aaron's sons, Nadav and Avihu, they brought an Esh Zara. They brought their own offering in the Mishkan, in the sanctuary, something they were not commanded to do. And the consequence of that was very severe. As a result of that, they both died immediately. Their souls were drawn out of their bodies in the presence of everybody. They were consumed with this kind of internal spiritual fire, and their souls were then exorcised from them, and they both died. And can you imagine such a thing, such a terrible trauma for Aaron and for his family, that two of his sons were now died on that day of such simcha, that day where they now inaugurated, this terrible calamity, this terrible tragedy takes place. And the Torah says in this week's parsha, V'yidom Aaron, Aaron was silent. And so that's such a great model, an example for every Jew in all generations, that we don't question Hashem's ways, that there's so much that we don't understand, we don't have privy to the information that goes into the running of the universe and into the life of every soul that exists in God's world. And so when God does something, even if it's something we don't understand, and even if it's something that is very painful for us, so V'yidom Aaron, Aaron is silent, Aaron does not question, Aaron carries on as a loyal servant of Hashem. And there are many different explanations as to why that happened. Why did it? There are many different approaches that Chazal, that our sages take in explaining what the reason is that this terrible thing happened, that Nadav and Avihu died on that day. So let's we'll stay with two of those explanations today. We'll just share two of them. The first one comes from the famous Ksav Sofer. Ksav Sofer was the son of the Chasam Sofer. And he quotes the Gemara in Bava Basra, Kuf Yutes Amud Beis, which refers to the children of Moshe Rabbeinu, the son of Moshe, as Gershon ben Menashe. So one of the reasons Chazal say that Nadav and Avihu died, they brought this Esh Zara, but they said it's because they had chosen not to get married and not to have children. And the Ksav Sofer says the reason why they did that, it's probably because of the explanation of this Gemara that says that the children of Moshe didn't follow in the footsteps of their illustrious father. And unfortunately, they went a little bit off the path, off the derech. And that's why Moshe's son Gershon is known as Gershon ben Menashe. Menashe was an evil king in Israel. And so he got the name of ben Menashe, because we call somebody a Ben Torah if they follow the Torah. We call somebody a Ben Mitzvah. That's the reference to the life that they've chosen to live. And so the Nadav and Avihu, the sons of Aaron, said, they came up with their own cheshbon, with their own calculation. And they said, well, the likelihood of a prominent leader who's high profile within the Jewish people, for their children to continue in that way is low. Because, you know, it's what we call the rabbi's children's syndrome, is that, you know, sometimes people that are high profile, that are have prominent public positions, so it's very difficult for their children. And their children are unfairly scrutinized. And everybody's saying, you know, look at this guy's child, what are they doing? That's the rabbi's child, how they're behaving. It becomes very difficult for the kids, and often it has a negative impact on the kids. And they say, you know, we don't really want this. We never chose this. This is and they move away. So Nadav and Avihu made that cheshbon and said, if we're going to be leaders of the Jewish people, so let us dedicate ourselves to the Jewish people, and we won't have children because probably it's going to end out badly if we do have children. And so we'll be completely focused and dedicated on the job of serving Klal Yisrael, and we won't have children. And that was a mistake. That was a big mistake. We see it's the same cheshbon made by Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Chizkiyahu HaMelech was a famous king, Klal Yisrael. He was a righteous king, and he was told through nevuah, through prophecy, that his children would be Roshaim, that he would have evil children. And so he decides not to have children. And Yeshaya Hanavi, Isaiah the prophet, rebukes him and says to him, that is not your cheshbon, that is not your calculation. That's not for you to decide. God told you you must get married. God told you you must have children. You must make an effort to do so. And if you're blessed with children, so how they turn out, you'll do your very best. But then how they turn out is their decision, and that's not your calculation. And so Yeshaya rebukes Chizkiyahu, and it's the same thing over here. The fact that Nadav and Avihu make this decision not to have children is a grave error, is a big mistake. And they are the ones that are, that it's not their decision. It's not up to them to make that decision. They have to follow God's commandments. God tells us to get married. God tells us to have children. And, you know, certainly we see in this, in the world today, that a lot of people choose not to get married and not to have children. And it's such a foolish decision. It's a very sad decision because they're depriving themselves of the most precious relationships that a human being can have, to firstly get married and to have a commitment of a spouse is a different world. So there could be couples that are going out and that are living together, but it's not the same until you're married. Once you're married, you're committed to one another. You're in this relationship through thick and through thin, and you're prepared to now share your life with this person. And when you make that commitment, so the development and the growth is unbelievable and incomparable to before you've made that commitment. And once that commitment is made, so then the couple can really work through things together. It's not easy. Marriage is not a bed of roses, but it's the best thing in the world. And the opportunity to get to develop and grow spiritually within the relationship of marriage is unmatched by anything else that exists in this world. And that's why God tells us to get married, because it forces us to work on ourselves in areas that we wouldn't be doing that work otherwise. Forces us to break out of our natural state of selfishness and to see somebody else and to work and live in a headspace, in a mindset that there's another human being that we are aware of, that we are cognizant of, that we take into account with everything that we do, somebody that we share our life with. And somebody that there's certain things, all of us have a lot of issues that we have to work on and areas that need a lot of focus and growth. And when we're in a relationship with somebody that's such a close, intimate relationship, so then those points come out and are highlighted and we have to now address them that we wouldn't otherwise be doing if we weren't in that relationship. And so with humility and with love, we have an opportunity now to work on ourselves and to grow in a way that we wouldn't be doing otherwise. So that's why we're supposed to get married, and that's why we're supposed to have children. When we have children, it's the same thing too. When we have children, we also then have to put ourselves to the side and focus on the needs of our children. And together with our spouse, we have this incredible, miraculous creature that's now part of us, an extension of us, an extension of our relationship. It's just an incredible thing. It's a mind-boggling thing. And now we have to take care of this other creature, this precious gift that has been given to us by God. So the growth that a person goes through by getting married, by having children, is tremendous. And then we do our best in order to bring up those children in the right way and in order to try and ensure that they grow up and make the right decisions in their own life. And so, yes, often, you know, prominent public figures, their children don't turn out so great. But it's, you know, we still have to try and do our best. And it's not, wasn't for Nadav and Avihu to make the decision not to get married, not to have children. And we see many great people in our history have had wonderful children. For example, Rav Chaim Kanievsky was the son of the Stadlergun. Greatness cannot be matched of that family. We have the Ksav Sofer, this is the vote of the Ksav Sofer himself. His followers, the Chasam Sofer, very wonderful, great people. Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, his followers, Yaakov Kamenetsky. So there are many, many wonderful, successful stories. It's not always doomed to failure. And so the role of a parent is to build a happy, normal environment in which their kids grow up, to provide a solid emotional foundation for their children, and then hopefully children will have the ability to make the right decisions in their life. There's actually, once we brought it up, I'll mention it, there's an interesting story, situation that happened in the United States recently, that there was a couple who got divorced. They had a son, and the courts gave the son the choice of whom he would live with. His mother was religious, was observant. His father was not observant. His mother was not emotionally stable. She was a bit of a crazy person, and his father was emotionally stable. And actually, so this boy was, he went to religious school, and he had a rabbi, and he asked his rabbi what he should do. And they put the shaila to Rav Shechter, the great Rav Shechter, who's actually the rabbi of YU, of Yeshiva University. And Rav Shechter said, there's no question the boy must go live with his father. Even though his father's not observant, his mother is observant. He needs to grow up in a stable emotional environment. And then he'll be able to have healthy relationships with his fellow human beings, and a healthy relationship with God. And then he can build on that foundation. So we see that's the role of parents. And the children then have a choice, and they make their own choices. But it's the role and responsibility of the parents to provide for their children a loving environment that is stable and that is happy and that is a foundation upon which for them to build their lives. So that's the one criticism of the children of Nadav and Avihu, of our Nadav and Avihu, that they chose not to get married. Please stay with us and we'll share the second explanation of the great and holy Nitziv.
This is Focus on Our Sages with Rabbi Danny Sackstein on 101.9 Chai FM.
We're discussing the tragic death of Nadav and Avihu, the children of Aaron, on the day that they were inaugurated to be Kohanim, on Yom HaShmini, the parasha we read this week. And the anniversary of that is now Rosh Chodesh Nisan, which is coming up. So the first explanation we said that our sages explained that they chose not to get married and have children, which was a big mistake. And that was the consequence and the cause of this second mistake that they made of bringing a offering that was not commanded. The second explanation of why this happened comes from the great and holy Netziv Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, who was the Rosh Yeshiva, the Volozhin Yeshiva in Lithuania. And he said that we see from here that the lesson we learn is they wanted to connect to Hashem through means other than the Torah and mitzvahs. So our understanding that of life as Jews is that a human being has a soul. And as the great Baal HaTanya says, the Rav Shneur Zalman, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, he said that, he writes in his famous Sefer Tanya, that every soul has a great yearning to connect with God and to reach out and build a relationship with God. But he writes, "E efshar ledavek ba'Hashem ba'emes." It's not possible to cling to connect with God in truth, unless it's through the Torah and the mitzvahs. In other words, we have many different concepts of spirituality. We have many different thoughts of what is spiritual and how we could do something that's spiritual and something that will make us feel good spiritually. But usually when it comes from us and it's our version of spirituality, and it's, you know, we have many different New Age ideas in our world today, and people come up with their own ideas of what is spirituality and how to connect to something that's transcendent. But when it makes us feel good, we really are worshiping ourselves and serving ourselves. The true way to connect with God is by doing what God tells us to do, is by doing what God commanded human beings to do. And even if it doesn't necessarily feel good from our point of view, and we don't really understand why that is what we are supposed to do, that is true service of the divine. That is true spirituality. When it's Ratzon Hashem, when it's the desire of Hashem, and we're following Hashem's plan and Hashem's system, even if it's inconvenient, that is real spirituality from a Torah point of view. And, you know, we're always looking for easy ways out, and we're always looking for, you know, solutions that suit us. But that's self-serving. That's not God-serving. For example, you know, even in the religious community, often we're looking for shortcuts and ways out. Like, very often communities don't keep the zmanim, the proper times. They don't daven at the proper times. So that is, you know, building Judaism around us, not around Hashem. The great Rav Huttner used to say that if Yeshiva Bochrim understood, they're saying Shema, there's not Bezman. We are supposed to say every single day, we're supposed to say the Shema in the morning at night. In the morning, we say it in the first three halachic hours of the day. At night, we have to say it after Tzeisal Kochavim, after the stars come out. But often people sleep in and miss the Zman Shema, miss the time of saying Shema. So Rav Huttner used to say that if Yeshiva Bochrim understood that saying Shema out of Zman is like waving a lulav during Hanukkah. You're not doing the mitzvah the way Hashem commanded you to do the mitzvah at the right time. So then they would make sure, be careful with Shema. So that is the Netziv says the other criticism of Nadav and Avihu is that they brought an offering, they wanted to connect to Hashem on their terms, on what they thought was right, on what they came up with themselves. That's wrong. That's not serving Hashem, that's serving oneself. And that's a big mistake. And it's a very powerful lesson for us in our modern world that we have so many different versions of spirituality, so many different ideas that people make up that they see as being holistic and transcendental and breaking out of the physical. But the truth is that the only way to really do that, as the Bala Tanya said, is through Torah and through mitzvahs. Okay, great. So let's move on to one more idea that I want to share with you. And that comes from the end of this week's parsha. This week's parsha tells us for the first time about kosher animals, what we can eat and what we can't eat. And again, it's an expression of God's will. We don't understand why God said these things we can have and these things we can't have. That's how Hashem built the world. That's part of the software of creation. And God says that if we eat the permissible foods, it enhances our spiritual journey. If we eat the prohibited fruit, if we eat trey foods, it blocks up our soul. It prevents our soul from connecting with eternity and with the higher spiritual worlds. Why and how? We don't know how that works. But these are God's commandments. So God tells us at the end of this week's parsha that the two criterion required for an animal to be kosher is that they need to have split hooves and an animal needs to chew the cud. These two criteria are necessary for us to be able to consume them, to eat them. Split hooves and chewing of the cud. But the Torah tells us that there are three exceptions to this rule that have one but not the other. So most animals have either both or none of these criteria, apart from four. There are four animals that have one but not the second, and therefore they are also not kosher. You can't eat them. So the camel and the shafan and the arneves. The shafan is the hyrax. In our terms in South Africa, it's a dasi. And the arneves is a hare, is a wild hare. And these three animals, they chew the cud, but they don't have split hooves. And then, of course, we have the chazir, the pig, that has split hooves and doesn't chew the cud. So those are the four. And in fact, it's interesting. Since the creation of the world, they've never discovered any animals that have one and not the other, apart from these four. These are the only four in this category, which is also one of the riyas, one of the proofs of the Torah, that the Torah is divine, because it was man-made. How could somebody write that these are the only four that only have one and not two of these criteria? It must be the creator of the universe that understands this, that knows this. And since then, with all the discovery of different human beings, different parts of the world, no other animals have come up with one of these two criteria apart from these four. So there's a very beautiful vort about this, a very interesting idea, which we're going to take an ad break, but when we come back, I'll share with you.
This is Focus on Our Sages with Rabbi Danny Sackstein on 101.9 Chai FM.
At the end of this week's parsha, we have the instruction of what's kosher and what's not, what we are able to consume and what we are not able to. And the Torah tells us the two criterion, split hooves and chewing the cud, are necessary for an animal to be kosher. And the Torah lists the four exceptions to the rule that have one of these and don't have both. The camel, the dasi, the hare have the arneves. They have they chew the cud but don't have split hooves. And the pig has split hooves and doesn't chew the cud. So they also would not be kosher. Tamei hu lachem, the Torah says, on each one of these, that they are tamei to you. There's a beautiful idea that I heard from Rabbi Frand with regards to the first three, the camel, the shafan, the hyrax, and the arneves, the hare. That the Torah refers to each one in different tenses, refers to the camel in present tense. I won't take you through the psukim because it might confuse you. But if you look at that grammatically, the verse that tells us the camel has choose the cover as next, but two is in past tense. The verse that tells us about the shafan, the hyrax, is in future tense. And the camel's in present tense, the shafan is in future tense, and the arneves, the hare, is in past tense. So why? Why does the Torah express these three in different tenses? They all should be in one tense, in one single tense. So the idea is that, and at the end of each one, the Torah says, Tamei hu lachem, it's tamei to you. And so the lesson that we learn from this, it's clear the Torah is teaching us a lesson. What is the lesson? The lesson we learn is that before you say Tamei hu lachem, that something is tamei, you have to know the past, the present, and the future. Before we can give our ruling, our judgment, and we're all so quick to judge others and so quick to categorize others and so quick to dismiss people and to, as they say in common vernacular, we diss people very quickly. We shouldn't be doing that, the Torah is telling us. We shouldn't do that. We don't know the past of this person. We don't know the present situation they're in. We don't know the future and where they're going. And so who are we to come and bear judgment and say, Tamei hu lachem, this person is treif. This person is tamei. This person is contaminated and is not pure. We are not in a position to do so. And it's such a beautiful idea and such an important life lesson for all of us, because we all have that tendency, don't we? We all quickly dismiss others and judge them in a negative way. And we need to stop ourselves from doing that. And if we're able to stop ourselves from doing that, and we're able to accept people and love people and be patient with people and not dismiss them and exclude them and categorize them, that they're not our kind of people. So the results will be quite incredible, quite staggering. And they'll be beautiful, the results, if we train ourselves to do that. Firstly, it'll stop us from speaking Lashon Hara, which is a terrible transgression and something that we all need to work on. Very, very hard. One of the most hardest commandments of the Torah is to stop judging others and speaking negatively in a derogatory way against others. And if we train ourselves not to pronounce others tamei and to dismiss them because we know we don't know their past, present, future, as the Torah is hinting to us in the Zohar Parsha, it'll change our human interpersonal relationships. There's a famous story about the great Rav Shach. Rav Shach was the rabbi, the Rosh Yeshiva, Ponovitch Yeshiva, and one of the greatest rabbis that lived in the last 100 years. I actually met Rav Shach, and I went to his funeral. He was a very holy man, a great genius. And there was once a situation, he was the head, the Rosh Yeshiva, the Ponovitch Yeshiva. And there was once a situation where there was a boy who was caught smoking in the toilets on Shabbos in Ponovitch Yeshiva. So you must understand what that means. Ponovitch Yeshiva is like one of the greatest yeshivas in the world, very difficult to get in. It's really for the elite, for the greatest minds, building the future of the Jewish people with those who have the capacity to understand and learn a tremendous amount of Torah. One of the students is smoking on Shabbos in Ponovitch Yeshiva. It's like a shanda, unbelievable such a thing takes place. So the Bochrim, the students, went to Rav Shach and they said, you have to expel this boy. You have to throw him out of the yeshiva. How could such a thing be happening in our elite institution, the Panovich Yeshiva? And Rav Shach said, it cannot be that a boy is just smoking in the yeshiva. There must be something going on in this boy's life. And he said to them, those that came, the zealots who came with this demand that he expels the boy, he said, we don't know this boy's parents. We don't know his situation. We don't know what he's going through and where he's going. We can't do anything until we find out what's going on in this boy's life. And it's such a great lesson for all of us. Before we jump into these very rash decisions and these emotional responses and these judgments that we have of others, so we need to hold back and we need to treat others with acceptance and with love. And we need to realize we don't know the past, the present, and the future. And who are we to judge anybody else? And that's one of the great lessons we learn from the end of this week's Parsha and from the laws of Kashrus. Thank you so much for listening and have a wonderful day.